Welcome, NerdWatch listeners, once again to a very special episode of the NerdWatch podcast. As you most of you know, the NerdWatch was at Amazing Hawaii Comic Con 2017. Of course, that involved my compatriot here with me, Todd, and of course, Alika, and in spirit, Cynthia Isaac, and of course, Format, and Gannon.
Yeah, yeah.
We got a chance to talk to terrific people like Casey Morimoto. We talked to
Horimoto.
Jeez, I'm horrible at this. Sorry, Casey Horimoto.
Was
thank
Lindsay
you very much.
There?
hilarious. But we got to talk to. We got to also talk to
William Shatner.
We did not get to talk to William Shatner.
Jason David Frank.
No, I did get to talk to DJ Cavicane. I got to talk to Chad Harden. Those interviews are all going to be right here.
Todd Bernardi.
I did get to speak to Todd Bernardi. And I also got to speak to some of the Hawaii Comic Book Alliance guys as
Gross.
Well. And I got to speak to some great artists, guys like CV Illustrations and guys from X-Ray Vision as well. And one of my favorite interviews, of course, Stacy Hayashi from Journey of Heroes. So there's a lot of that stuff. That's going to be on these, I guess, 10 or 12 interviews. I can't remember how many, but I just want to let you guys know the very special episode. Yeah, I know there's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than that. So please sit back, enjoy. They're about maybe 10 to 15 minutes, some maybe 20 minutes. And we talk to great artists and great entrepreneurs.
I like peanut butter.
So make sure you guys stay tuned.
On your
Amazing
balls.
Hawaii Comic Con. We can never make anything professional on this show, can we? Like, ever. Anyway, enjoy the Amazing Hawaii Comic Con interviews right here on the NerdWatch podcast. So, aloha and enjoy.
Shut up.
Is it chunky peanut butter?
Welcome, everybody, to another special edition of the NerdWatch podcast. If I sound a little weird, it's because I'm not on my typical XLR microphone. I'm on my Zoom with a very special two-way mic. I'm here talking to and I'm just going to call him because he wears many hats, but I think entrepreneur would probably be the best term. Would that not be correct, Mr. Josh Blaylock?
I'll take it.
You'll take it? Fantastic. I am with Mr. Josh Blaylock from Devil's Due, you guys publish comics. You guys are doing movies, TV. Is that correct? Am I getting this right? I mean, we're up at the panel together. I want to make sure that I'm getting this right.
We don't have any. I mean, we've got stuff in development all the time. So
right.
Fingers crossed.
So you have an amazing amount of work out on your tables here at the Amazing Hawaii Comic Con. So tell us exactly what is Devil's Due.
Devil's Due Entertainment is a comic book publisher. You know, we focus on creating like original content. Right now we're all creator-owned comics. So very similar to Image Central. You know, that's just putting out books by different people, all different genres. We don't have, like, a house style, you know. So, being that we're coming out to Honolulu for the first time, not quite sure what to ship out, you know, what people are going to resonate with. I was invited out to the show basically as myself, and I am a writer and an artist, so I'm a little more heavy at this show on, like, my own personal books. But I brought a little sampling of the other stuff that we publish, so we've got, you know, my books, Mercy Sparks, Igloo Barbecue is my newest one, and Barack the Barbarian, the graphic novel, How to Self-Publish Comics, the prose book. And then we have Plume, Tales of Mystery, Squarriors, Lord of Gore, Galaxies for Hire, all kinds of stuff.
Now, you have, like I said, you wear many hats. You're an artist. You're also a writer. Why would you take up the daunting task of starting this business that would probably, I'm assuming, would consume all of your time?
I don't know. Let me know when you find out why. No, I was just, in like the 90s, as like a kid in Ohio, with, you know, the internet even not even really being a thing yet, you know, I just wanted to be in comics so bad as a creator. And the time was part of it, because there was lots of it. There was like an indie boom, and I just somehow got down the rabbit hole of, you know, learning how to publish myself because I didn't want to wait for somebody else to do it. And
you said image. That is kind of the magic word around these parts.
Yeah, well, you know, I was like 14 years old when all those guys left Marvel. And, you know, I was horrible, you know, but I was sending all my submissions to DC and Marvel to try to get work. And, you know, I'd always just wanted to draw. And then that made me start investigating you know, well, how you know, learning about publishing. I just wanted to know everything I could about all of the industry, not just the art part. And, you know, I ended up actually having the knack for the business side of it. So that was my downfall.
No, I gotcha. Okay, so you thought you were an artist first, but it sounds like you were the back end guy first. It sounds like is what you made of it, right? Or you could still consider yourself an artist.
Yeah,
first.
Well, I'd say I'm still an artist first, but I never the way my brain works, I can't just do the art and not think about the business. So I'm sure if I was being published by other people, I'd still be wondering. Like I'd be out there doing almost everything they did to try to promote myself and always want to know that they were like I was doing it the best way possible. Actually, it's kind of probably what is one of the issues with Image Weiwei. I mean, we're going back like almost 15 years now.
Yeah, for sure.
But I was running like a studio and they weren't really set up for that. And it's totally different there now, different management there now. But, you know, we were kind of too big to operate within their system, which worked very well for the one-on-one creators.
Right.
So that's when we went solo. But now I keep that in mind when I'm trying to work with art creators. It's actually almost like the opposite now. We are really set up to publish artists that really do want to help themselves. So they're already, they also kind of share that mindset. They're out there hustling, promoting themselves. And, you know, because the reality is no publisher can push an artist as good as they can.
Right.
And, you know, we do, but we try to help give them the tools to promote themselves better.
Right. Now, that is one of the things you said. I mean, you and I did a panel earlier, and you were really getting into and talking about that in particular. It seems as if that you are more like a hand up for these artists, not like the guy that's pushing them. You're saying, hey, listen, you need to get out there and do the work, and I will support you. So is that what you do at Devil's Due?
I'd say that's fair, yeah, because that's how we can that's how we have the means to put out as much as we do, and that's sort of what I look for in the projects I'm picking. It's like we're not the place where someone comes where we're going to develop their idea from scratch and make it something that, because it takes so much energy to do that, and it's still, no matter what, you know, you never know until you put it out there into the world. And if you're going to do that as a company, you kind of need to then own it as a company. Like you kind of will have to have some control over it. So for me to pick up creator-owned books and leave the power in the artist's hands, you know, the way that, I mean, maybe somebody out there figured out a way to, like, take all the risk and, you know, but, you know, it's when you go to a company, like when you go to Image, you're taking all the risks.
Right.
You know, you're putting all, you know, they don't.
You're betting on yourself.
Yeah, and when you go to most other publishers, you know, you might have a creator-owned deal, but that might involve them actually controlling way more of the movie rights or merchandising rights, or actually owning a piece of it. You know, you know, that's why, you know, I am developing a lot of my own books too. You know, that's why I do this. You know, so I have to do that, or I'm not fulfilled there either. And
Now, for you, when it came to doing this, what was your inspirations? I mean, were you younger going, this is what I want to be an artist? Or was it something that you were like you found out later in life and you're like, maybe I want to do this? When did that realization come to you that you wanted to do comics?
I always drew. Like, I don't remember not drawing.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I always wrote stories. So my parents say I did that when I was like 2 years old. So actually, it's funny. I have this new book, Igloo Barbecue, which is actually, you can point to little books I drew when I was like 6 years old, which is where some of that came from. And some of my, and then later, some of my earliest self-publishing came from. But really, I got into wanting to be an animator at first when I was like 4 or 5. I try to tell people I wanted to make cartoons.
Right.
But like the cartoons on TV, not in the newspaper, because I didn't know how to explain. I didn't know the word animator. So that went pretty far back. And around 12, 13, realized all I ever do is draw comics. I probably want to do comics. And it was never fun to just draw the pictures. I always wanted to be involved in telling the story, too. Comics is like the only medium where you can do all of that.
Right.
And then it just immediately became like, okay, let's start reading interviews with comic artists and writers and who's doing this professionally and how you do it. And no one in school could help you at that time.
Right.
It's a little better there now for people, but really this is a weird business that they don't teach in school. And then right at like, I think I was like around 14, all those, I'd already become a sucker for, because of the Disney thing, read Walt Disney's biographies, read his whole story of how he just started all that from scratch, and then became a sucker for any kind of underdog story, the crappiest VH1, where are they now, so, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I got you.
And then all those Image guys left Marvel to start that company, and it was just like, oh my God, that's awesome, you know, and then that's kind of the path I wanted to follow.
Yeah, because at that time it was like Marvel and DC tell them, no one's going to follow the artist. They just want to follow the character, and then they found out that they were wrong. So that was quite an epiphany for them, and it really. Yeah. I guess Image does inspire a lot more comic book artists than we even realize.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they did change the industry. I mean, they had a cover. I think I lived in Cincinnati then. I remember there was a big story in the newspaper there about
right.
this company, comic company, for me. That doesn't happen.
Right.
That kind of marketing didn't happen back then. And then, and it was all organic. But it's also because I got into comics that way. I always liked all the weird indie stuff, and that's the kind of the stuff I wanted to do, like
right.
little punk rock characters, things like that. Scud the Disposable Assassin.
Oh, that's a cool
one. Milk and Cheese. And I was a DC geek, but I never really cared about drawing superhero books. I definitely wasn't, you know, I got into Marvel way actually more through the movies and stuff. I read some of the old, like, Infinity Gauntlet,
yeah.
things like that, but
I'm
was
a
DC
guy,
nerd.
Too. It's weird. I mean, everybody that I talk to has always said that they're a DC guy, and I'm like that, too, and I thought I was, like, one of the only people, like, because everybody's all over Marvel, and I figured, like, I was, like, the only guy, like, the last man standing yeah. over here.
No, for me, it was because my uncle showed up with, like, the Batman movie came out, the
right,
Michael
right.
Keaton Batman movie, and then that's yeah. when I learned, like, Batman was badass and wasn't goofy, and that sent me down the Batman rabbit hole, and then I found out my uncle had all these Teen Titans comics. I read those. So then once you did that, you're kind of set on that path of, like, okay, this is the universe I'm going to learn. But being an 80s kid, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Voltron, all that stuff was what I really loved. So then I fell into a t-shirt licensing job as the art director right out of, or I was like a 2-year quick art school thing, like a portfolio school, and because I was already publishing comics and like little black and white books.
Oh, okay.
And I got it distributed through Diamond and stuff like that. Nothing anyone's really heard of, but then I learned licensing through that job and used that. I was like, you know, wait a minute, maybe I can get a license to elevate my name out there, and I figured a crapshoot I would try for G.I. Joe, and surprisingly got it. I didn't go for Transformers because Transformers had never really went away. They had Beast Machines, they had all these other things. G.I. Joe was dead.
Right.
And it was amazing to me and all my friends and anyone my age that there was no comic book.
Right.
And I learned why. It was because the retailers and the people in charge of the licensing and all the people old enough to be in the business, they were, you know, anyone over 30 at that time, they didn't get it.
Got it, okay.
The Hasbro tried to take it to Marvel. Marvel was like, we don't want that. That's some 80s thing.
So I'm guessing it was scarier to actually get G.I. Joe than it actually was to petition for it.
I was like, that you would think that, but it was, and that's how it should have been, but it was so, such a whirlwind when it started.
Okay, okay.
That wasn't even time. It was stressful. Definitely stressful. Also, you immediately have, like, thousands of people that love you and thousands of people that hate you before you've even done anything.
Right, right.
Because everyone's going to have their opinion, and it was just, like,
right.
never, it was like, okay, I got the deal memo sent through email. I was like, this isn't going to happen. And then all of a sudden the price terms came through and stuff like that, royalties. It's like, okay. And then they said there's a contract. And then it took them, like, they said they're sending a contract, and it took, like, 2 or 3 months to get the contract because they went, so their department moved so slow. And
right.
I was like, oh, it's never going to come. It showed up. I lived in this crappy apartment. I just moved to Chicago. And I had a big apartment building where, like, you you never really wanted your packages laying around on the bottom because you never knew.
Right.
So I tried to make sure I was like home from work as much as possible to like wait for that package to show
up. You're the part of the sketchy part of town. I got it.
And then got it, and then had to do that deal as devils do. Before I took it to any other companies, and then took it to Image. And it's funny because Matt Hawkins still, you know, comments on that sometimes. Like, I took it to Top Cow first, and they were like, "Eh, no, we don't really do licenses." And then I took it to Image Central, and they were kind of like, "Eh." But there was one guy there, the old marketing guy, who was like, "No, we have to do this," and sold him on it and picked it up. And then that became like the number one Image book.
Which is crazy.
So,
and it seems like that's the way that you see a lot of that happening now. I mean, even some of Disney's older properties are being pushed out to like independent comics or comic distributors and such.
Well, now this is part of the reason why I haven't gotten back into licensing is there was no void. There was no licensing thing like that. Like it was like kind of recognizing this gap. There was Dark Horse did some licenses, but it really wasn't a force, and you weren't taken seriously as a publisher if you just did licensed properties.
Right.
And then now, that's a huge part of the business is licenses. Right. Like, that's enormous. So all these companies, Boom and Dynamite and IDW, I mean, they all live off licensed properties now. And that's helped the indies because it's helped all these indie publishers rise. But now it's a kind of a glut. So there's only a handful of things out there I would feel like, you know, fill like a niche that isn't being met right now.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, just want to kind of have been trying to get back to like the thing where it all started from, putting out my own books and then helping other creators also get their original concepts out. If the right license comes along, I'm not saying we wouldn't get it. For now, this is, we're using things like Kickstarter and all the digital outlets and all the Comic Cons that exist now, and distributing through the stores, sort of like one big holistic approach to it.
Now that what's interesting is that brings us back to Devil's Due really quick. That's what you formed Devil's Due to do, was to be kind of like this all encompassing company. Now my question first off is, why the name Devil's Due?
The reason was there was no reason.
Oh, are you serious? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, it was like, I was working for that t-shirt company, sitting in, actually it's funny, the Javits Center, before New York Comic Con was around, for some clothing trade show, just doodling, and I was like, well, what if I do, you know, I was trying to think of my own t-shirt line, and then, but also I was doing freelance comic stuff and everything, and I was like, okay, well, what would be kind of badass but cool, like that didn't really mean anything, but it could be a commercial art studio, it could be a comic book company, it could be a t-shirt line, it could just be a brand. And I was a big rockabilly punk rock ska nerd, and like it's kind of like wanted it to have like sort of a little bit of that look to it. And
so you're a Stray Cats guy. Yeah,
be a record label. Just doodled the logo, what became the Mr. Suit's head, which has been, he's a kind of a character in Mercy Sparks.
Right.
But that became the original Devil's Due logo. It's changed since then. Yeah, that was it. And I just liked the name and
and it stuck.
It is weird, like some, especially like super religious people, will think that there's some nefarious purpose. And it's like,
right.
Sorry, I got nothing.
Well, listen, before we go, tell us a little bit about your comic, Mercy Sparks, and then tell us a little about maybe some of the highlighted artists that you have on your brand as we speak.
Sure. Yeah, I'll explain Mercy Sparks, which now makes it sound like I'm totally trying to do some like devil stuff. She's a devil girl that works for Heaven. And she hunts rogue angels. So Heaven has a problem with rogue angels hiding on Earth and just kind of going off the grid. And they decided to send a devil after them instead of an angel enforcer. That kind of starts that whole storyline. So Mercy's on Earth. She looks human. She's here. But she was sort of just put here by them. She wasn't asked. So she's a little reluctant to do her job. So I like to say it's, if you like Preacher, Lucifer, Hellboy, you know, Jessica Jones, all that stuff mixed together. but she acts more like Bad Santa.
I gotcha.
Then there's a new book, totally different than that, called Igloo Barbecue. You can go to igloobbq.com. It's also a webcomic. That is loosely based on one of the first things I ever self-published called Penguin Brothers, which is like anthropomorphic, these penguin characters that were also superheroes, but they really were just teenagers. Like also, like Mercy, they didn't really want to do their jobs. Now, it's about a character named Blizzy, who is a comic book artist, and when he was younger, he did a book called Penguin Brothers. So I've got a meta there to give it an acknowledgement, but it's just slice of life. It makes fun of the Comic Cons, it makes fun of comics.
Cool,
it's just fun to read. I have Barack the Barbarian here, which is a collection of our miniseries we did back in 2009 when Barack got elected, and I did a new short story for it that is the retelling of the story by a grandfather in the distant Ice Age in the future, and it's like crazy Game of Thrones fantasy story. He's telling all his fact. It was largely written by Larry Hama, and he's the one who really fleshed out all the characters and everything back in the day.
You're almost obligated because you're from Chicago to do that, right?
Yeah, and then we're in Hawaii, too, so we're like, we have to bring it here. I have my one book I wrote, How to Self-Publish Comics, Not Just Create Them, which is now in its like fourth edition. Everything and anything you want to know about the business of comics behind the scenes. And then we have a bunch of other books from other artists that are great. Plume is a Western fantasy. Like, it's a Wild West, Hell on Wheels meets a whole fantastical magic story. Squarriors is badass, about, I'd say it's post-apocalyptic Secret of Nim.
Oh.
All the humans are gone, and they were kind of wiped out along the lines of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. But you don't really know what wiped them out yet. And that's in its second series right now.
Can I ask about one? Just because it reverts back to when I was a kid, I remember watching Wizard of Gore. I see Lord of Gore over there. What is that?
Lord of Gore is one of our awesome horror titles. So the Lord of Gore is a series of movies in this comic that were from like the going all the way back to the 70s that were like a huge horror franchise. And the Headsman was the slasher in the movies. So now it's kind of like Freddy or Jason, you know, it's been around forever. And the screenwriter on the new movie finds out that the most popular murder scene back in the 70s or back in the 80s was an actual real like snuff film. Like, they actually killed someone.
Oh.
And he's learned about it. There's a whole conspiracy behind it. And he's about to get the axe and lose his job on the movie, too. So he's got to decide if he's going to release this, you know, information out there for his benefit, but also he'd be jeopardizing his life. And just as he's figuring out what happens, the slasher appears in real life and starts killing people, all associated with the movie. Really cool. If you're a horror nerd, you got to check out that one.
You have some very talented artists and writers on, because those are some very unique stories.
Yeah, that's The Lord of Gore is written by actually a newcomer, D.B. Stanley, but he's a great comic writer. Pacing's great in it. That's what really drew me to it. Daniel Leister is the artist, though. He's done a number of things for Xenoscope. He drew Hackslash, Hackslash versus Army of Darkness, all kinds of stuff. Ashley Witter on Squarriors is amazing. Kaylin Smith, her book Plume, is actually a super popular webcomic. The Tales of Mr. Ree is part of a universe of horror books that we have by Dirk Manning. Yeah, a whole bunch of different artists. But it's all based around the Nightmare World universe. We call it the Durkiverse.
That's cool.
The backstory is that Lucifer awakens Cthulhu to kickstart Armageddon ahead of time. And then all pandemonium breaks loose, you know. Literal biblical Armageddon of demons coming up out of the ground and, you know, people disappearing. And 3 days later, it all goes back to normal. And everyone just sort of, like, tries to forget about it and get things back to normal and pretend it never happened. And Ree is one of the characters that doesn't buy it. And he knows something's wrong. And he knows something shady went down, didn't happen the way it was supposed to. And he's sort of like a Constantine grifter type.
Gotcha.
Figuring it out. There's three trade paperback volumes of that. There's a Nightmare World omnibus collection coming out soon. 400 pages of anthologies of all kinds of horror stories that live in this universe. And then, what am I leaving out there? Galaxies for Hire. We don't have any more of those here right now. It's sci-fi. It's like Guardians of the Galaxy meets Voltron with an all-female cast.
Oh.
It's really fun. And Solitary is a book we did, too, that was about a mortal man on death row. It's like a superhero that doesn't realize he's immortal until he was executed. And now he has to decide if he's going to, like, serve out his sentence in jail forever. I feel like I'm...
You're missing something?
Forgetting one of my children. But,
That's right. It happens. It happens. But where... If they can't make it to Hawaii Comic Con, where can they pick up all the Devils Due comics?
All comic book shops can get them. You know, we go through Diamond, the main distributor. DevilsDue.net has all of our books there. We try to do pre-orders and stuff, too, so you can reserve your books ahead of time. We have digital editions on our website. We have everything on Comixology. And through that, we're on Kindle on a lot of the books. So everywhere.
My last serious question. Do you think that that's the way the industry is going? Do you think digital is where it's going, or are people going to be stuck to the books? What do you think?
I think the market's decided no. It's like, I can't help, I don't have the numbers, but I feel like when an Iron Man movie comes out, there have to be, you know, hundreds of thousands of downloads of Iron Man comics by kids that just saw the movie that want to, you know, binge. I can't see how that doesn't happen. Whereas, you know, I had to drag my mom to a comic shop when the Batman movie came out when I was, like, a kid.
Right.
And now you can just binge immediately. But for us, I mean, and it seems to be consistent, the digital sales are, like, you know, 10-15% of the print sales. And I don't think people predicted the Comic-Cons exploding like they did in the last 5 years. So it's more of a experiential, you know, face-to-face thing. Kickstarter kind of came out of the woodwork too, which wasn't being predicted when the digital stuff was taking off. So now it's like you might, kick with Kickstarter, the best books are the ones that are given away for free online as webcomics, and then their fans get a chance to buy something really cool from the creator. It's all about the connection. And, our stuff's kind of all over the place. Some books do better in the store, some do better in Kickstarter, some do better at conventions. It's like, who knows what the hell is going to happen 5 years from now?
But of course, books is where it's at as of this point.
Yeah, it is. It's and the bigger the book, the better. Like, you know, the one thing I sold out first here is the Mercy Sparks Omnibus. Any kind of omnibus where people can binge. Binging is the future. Netflix binging, comic binging, you know,
right.
TV series binging on HBO, like all that stuff.
Right, right. Now, here's my less serious question as we get out of here. Is this your first time to the islands?
It is.
And?
It's amazing.
I hope you're having a good time.
Yeah, I have even less of an excuse not to have been here before because my uncle lives on Maui, but we went out.
That's where we're from. We're from Maui Comics and Collectibles. I'm part of the Nerdwatch, and we're based out of Maui.
Yeah, Maui's awesome. We actually booked a few days there, and then we were scheduled to come here. We thought, like, oh, we'll probably enjoy chilling on Maui, but then we'll probably be bored and ready to, like, come to the city, and we didn't want to leave Maui.
That always happens. It's crazy because I'm originally from California. My mom is from Honolulu here in Oahu, and I've been here a long time. But when I moved to Maui, it's like when you come back here, you like never want to come back to Oahu.
It might be the first place in 16 years of living in Chicago that I'm not ready to go home.
And I can see by the smile on your wife's face that she agrees.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm glad you're having a good time, and this is your first time here, right? So you will be back, I hope.
I hope so. It always helps us. Definitely let the Comic-Con here know that you want us back.
I will let them know. I will let Jimmy J know. I know him personally.
Yeah, everybody listening, if you want us back, let them know.
I will definitely do that. Where can we find you, by the way? Are you guys on Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook? Where can they find you?
Yeah, if you get a shot of that, all my stuff's up there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram as Josh C. Blaylock. Some other bastard took my handle there. But I'm on Twitter as Josh Blaylock. I'm on Facebook as Josh Blaylock. Or you can find that stuff. You can just go to joshblaylock.com and get links there. DevilsDue.net. We have all our social media stuff there, too.
Fantastic. Well, Josh, it has been an absolute pleasure. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time here. We'd love to have you back. And I hope to see more from Devils Do very soon.
Cool. Thank you very much.
I certainly appreciate it. Well, we're out of time for Josh. We'll be back here later on this afternoon to talk to more of these great creators. So for the Nerd Watch, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next interview, aloha.